Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, knowing your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on privacy when we come back. Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity, from bank deposits to medical visits, has produced greater efficiency and security, all right. But it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, the federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American, and that's according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. And closer to home, our state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. Now, a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems. These 1,776 separate data systems contained 10,799 categories of information. 10,799 categories of information about New York residents. And every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, information about you is gained from 63 sources. This information is then gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how your government, your bank, your insurance company, business and industry in general obtains all of this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? And what do they want it for? Well, knowing how this information is gathered, what information is being stored, and what information you want to keep personal and private actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, then call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. And let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and just as private as you want to be. It's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Just send us an email, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email machine and send us an email request. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we're talking about privacy. And in the last program, I took on the Census Bureau, and I pointed out that you don't have to answer anybody for anything, period. Now, there are times when you have agreed to give this information or agreed to give these answers. And if you're a licensed driver, you have made an agreement for the privilege of obtaining this driver's license. And you've agreed to give certain information. And you know, most people give the information, and it's fairly innocuous. And I'm not sitting here telling you what information you should or shouldn't give. I don't know what you should tell other people. And I hardly know what's good for me, let alone what's good for you. But I came to the conclusion years ago that I didn't want to tell everybody everything about me. There are some things that I wanted to keep personal and private. And so I set out to find out, well, can I do that? Now, for instance, we know a lot about President Bush, but you don't know very much about his travel schedule, and neither does the Taliban, and neither does Al-Qaeda. And every once in a while, the president jumps on his 747 and whisks over to Baghdad, and then whisks back home. And you know, you don't know that he was there until after the fact. So there are people that are very public that have some secrets. You know, they're kind of personal and private in their travel plans. President Bush is pretty personal and private in his travel plans. I don't know where he's going next, and he ain't telling. And you could do the same thing if you put your mind to it. And I just thought I would share with you this week some of the tricks to the trade as it relates to privacy. Now, we teach a business school here, and privacy is a part and parcel of the business school. Because when you're doing business, you really don't want the IRS knowing how much you charge for that job, not you, or Social Security, or anybody else. And I don't care if you reveal the secret. It's your choice to make. But I really don't want the IRS to know what I do. I don't want the FBI to know whether I'm doing a business deal or not. I don't want the CIA to know where I bank, how much money I've got in the bank, how I spend it, what I spend it on, where I go. And so I work, you know, fair to middle and hard. It really doesn't take a lot of work to be private. It takes a lot of work to be public. Because to be public, you've got to give this information out. You've got to fill out forms. You've got to go to the doctor's office and answer all the questions to give up your privacy. I mean, if you couldn't read, you couldn't write, and you couldn't talk, you'd be 100% private. Because all of the information about you is being given by you. You're the guy that's telling everybody everything. And you were taught to do this in the first grade. You were taught, when you walked into the first grade, first thing they taught you how to do is to put your name on the paper. Got to have your name on the paper. Pretty soon they taught you to put a date on the paper. Pretty soon they taught you to put the heading on the paper, arithmetic, spelling, or whatever. And your teacher taught you as you progressed through the public indoctrination program that if you don't have anything to hide, there's no reason for you not to answer the question. So the policeman, when he asks you a question and you don't answer it, from his own training, he says, oh my God, this guy's got something to hide. People have asked me that. Well, what have you? What is it that you're hiding? And I always tell them, well, if I told you what it was I was hiding, it wouldn't be hidden. If I told you what it is that I'm hiding, it wouldn't be hidden. So I'm not going to tell you what I'm hiding. I'm hiding my privacy. Privacy is something that I know that you don't know, and I ain't telling. That's what privacy is. Nothing more, nothing less. I know, and I ain't talking. Now, Americans have been taught from childhood that they ought not to keep these kinds of secrets, and especially from government, the nice policeman. I never met a nice policeman. And I'm sure that if you're a policeman, you're a nice guy, and you see yourself as being a nice guy. I've never had a personal relationship with a policeman before. I never had a friend that was a policeman. And every policeman that I've ever had contact with was seeking information from me so that he could prosecute me. I've had more than one policeman on the witness stand. I asked him the question, is your appearance here in court today designed in any way to prosecute, punish, fine, and jail the defendant, George Gordon? And they always answer yes. Let me tell you, people who come in to tell stories about me and to cause me financial loss or loss of my freedom, they'll lock me up in jail, those aren't my friends. I don't need people like that. So I'm pretty selective about who my friends are, and policemen aren't in that group. And in fact, I've been in jail quite a few times, and I don't mind telling you that I'd rather be in the jail cell with the prisoners. It's a better class of people. That's been my observation. Now I gotta tell you that there's a lot of bad people in jail. I've run across a lot of bad people, and they probably need to be in jail. Statistically, about 85% of them need to be there because they're actually guilty of the crimes that they've committed. Now, in many cases, there are people locked up in jail that are innocent, and I don't think that that's right, and I don't think that that ought to be. And primarily, here at the law school, we work hard trying to educate people to stay out of jail, stay out of the clutches of your government. I'm not trying to protect drug dealers and murderers and thieves and people like that. I'm just trying to protect innocent people that haven't got enough moxie to keep their mouth shut. And so judges, you know, often will tell, you know, in their decisions, they say, you know, that the guy who fares out better in the tax court or fares out better in tax cases is the guy that keeps his mouth shut and relies upon his constitutional rights. He fares out better than the honest taxpayer that comes in and just fesses up and tells them everything they want to hear. They don't fare out very well at all. All right, so let's take a look at the draft. There's a guy by the name of Ziggy Crothers. And old Ziggy, he decided back in the Vietnam War, you know, just came to a conclusion. He said, you know, I'm just going to go to prison. Go to war over in Vietnam. So he decided that he was not going to volunteer for the Army. Now, at that time, they had a thing called the draft. And his number came up, and so he had filled out his Selective Service System card. Now, a lot of times people will write here, and they'll say, do I have to register with the Selective Service System? And the answer to that is yes. Yes, you do. Now, what you don't have to do is give them any information. You have to register, but you don't have to give any information. So in the last program, I pointed that out, that, you know, I answer every question on the form. In fact, I just really enjoy filling out these forms. So today we'll take a look at the Selective Service System form. And on the back side of it, they have what they call the Privacy Act statements in fine print. I mean, on the face of it over here, you know, they're asking for certain what looks to be innocuous information, like, you know, your name, address, age, telephone number, so on. And now, for instance, here's a question number 7. It says current telephone number. Do you have a telephone? All right. Do you have to reveal your telephone? Aren't there people out there that have unlisted numbers? Aren't those people that don't want their number published in the phone book? Isn't that a measure of privacy? And yet here's the Selective Service System. They're asking you for your phone number. If you've got a right to have a private phone number that's unlisted from the telephone book, then why do you have to give it to the Selective Service System? Is there a law that requires you to have a telephone? What if you don't have a telephone? Then they want you to put down somebody else's telephone. Should you be giving out other people's telephone numbers to the Selective Service System? You know, these are all decisions that you have to make. And I came to a conclusion. I said, well, I'm not going to give my telephone number. So what I do is I put on question number 7, Fourth Amendment objection. That's all. That's an answer. It's a legal answer. When you receive a form and you put an answer on the form, it may not be the answer that the Selective Service System wants. What they want is a telephone number there. They want a number that they can call and make contact with you. And what if you don't want to make contact with them? And what if you don't want them to make contact with you? I don't give my telephone number out to the mafia. I don't want anybody at the mafia to call me. That's a criminal organization. I don't want to do business with the mafia. The government is a criminal institution. It's a criminal operation. I don't want to do business with the government. Now, most people want to, or they're fearful and timid, and they think, well, I have to, because if I don't, you know, they're going to do something bad to me. Now, our founding fathers, when they crafted our Constitution, they put in a thing they're called the Bill of Rights. And in the Bill of Rights, they put in a First, a Fourth, and a Fifth Amendment. And these three amendments working together are pretty darn good, you know, for the average guy. If you knew how to use them, they'd be pretty good. Be a lot better if you knew how to use them. Now, that's just one question. They've got eight questions here on the Selective Service System registration form. Ziggy, in this case, he filled out the form, and he gave them all the information, but he decided he didn't want to go to war, didn't want to go to Vietnam. And in fact, he was prepared to go to prison for 4 years. The penalty for draft dodging or draft evasion is 4 years in a federal pen. And so he said, well, I'd rather spend 4 years in Leavenworth than 2 years in, or 1 year in Vietnam. So when his draft number came up, he lived in Chattanooga, Tennessee. So his draft number came up, they had to go down to the Army Induction Center in Atlanta, Georgia. And so he was due there at 1 p.m. on June 13th, 1968. So he showed up right on time. And he went into a big room. And in the big room, he said there were 23 other guys, 23 other inductees, and five or six Army guys. And said some of these Army guys had a lot of chevrons on their sleeves and they had gold braid all over them. And he didn't know what they were, not being an Army man and all, but he could see that they were important because they had lots of ribbons and things and medals. And so somebody came up there and he ordered all these guys to, you know, line up into two ranks of 12 each. So there was 12 guys in the front row and 12 guys in the second row, 24 guys in all. So Ziggy strategically structured himself so that he was in the second row on the left side, the left end. And somebody said, all right, everybody, take one step forward and raise your right hand and repeat after me. All right. Now, that's an important, very important process that you go through when you're being drafted into the Army. It's called your oath of allegiance. And you can't be a soldier without this oath of allegiance. Did you know that? I mean, if you want to be a soldier, you got to take this oath. Now, I want to point out to you, did you know in the Bible, oaths are prohibited? Yeah, that's right. And it's against the law for you to raise your right hand and swear. And that's located in James 5:12 and Matthew 5:33 through 37. And it is taken from Isaiah chapter 6. So, you know, it's very common here in America for people to raise their hand and swear an oath. Jurors do it. Public officials do it. Army people do it. I mean, it's common. Everybody does it. I've done it a time or two. I don't do it anymore. I used to, but I quit doing that because it violates biblical law. And when you violate biblical law, it gets you in trouble. It'll get you into the Army. And that's a lot of trouble. And so Ziggy definitely took one step back, one step to the left, and said, wait a minute. If I do this, will I be waiving any of my civil or constitutional rights? And a man came over, and he said this man had a lot of gold braid. He had lots and lots of gold braid on him, and lots of medals. And he escorted Ziggy out of the room, put him in a little private room. And he waited in the room with Ziggy, totally stone cold silent, never said a word. They were in there about 20 minutes. 20 minutes of silence. And they just sat there kind of staring at each other, and pretty soon, about 20 minutes went by, and then three or four other guys came into the room. And I took Ziggy back out into the big room. Now he's surrounded by all these guys, all these Army guys. And the other 23 inductees were all gone, he said. They don't know what happened to them. They went to Vietnam or someplace. Anyway, they disappeared. But the five or six Army guys were all there. And he said they went to work on him, and they threatened him. They played the Mutt and Jeff routine on him. They bribed him. They cajoled him. They threatened him. And they were really nasty. He said they threatened to take me out behind the place, just beat the living hell out of him. They threatened to put him in prison. They bribed him a little bit. They said, you know, you're just making a big scene over nothing. In all probability, you'll go to Korea and probably spend the time over there in Germany or someplace. No guarantee you're going to go to Vietnam. You know. And so they were asking him questions. Ziggy wouldn't talk. Ziggy had learned one very important thing. So shut up. And this went on all afternoon. It was about 1:30. So it went on all afternoon. These five guys worked on him, he said. And he was only about 20 years old at the time this happened. And at 4:45, he said he remembered the hour because about 4:45, they gave him a one-way bus ticket back to Chattanooga with the promise that he would be prosecuted and that he would be convicted and jailed. He would spend 4 years in Leavenworth. And when I talked to him, it had been about 10, 15 years prior to that, he had never gotten another letter from the Army. A very important thing goes on here. Did you know that there is no compulsory military service in the United States? All right, so it comes under Title 8 of the U.S. Code. Two things have to be present in order for you to become a soldier. One, you have to take a step forward, raise your right hand, take the oath of allegiance. Number two, you have to sign an enlistment contract. Now, when you join the Army voluntarily, you go down to the Army recruiter's office and you sign an enlistment contract. At some future time, you go to basic training where you are then sworn in. In the draft, it works exactly exactly opposite to that. They send you a letter and it says, greetings, you've been inducted into the United States Army. That's the equivalent of receiving a letter from the court saying you've been selected for jury duty. If you've been selected for jury duty, does that mean that you have to serve on the jury or that you're going to be selected for jury? No, not at all. It means that you have to appear at the courthouse at the date and time specified. And if you don't, you can be prosecuted now. So when you receive your jury summons, don't fail to appear. That's a summons. It's a subpoena. Everybody has to follow subpoenas and summons. You know, that's the law. You don't have to serve on the jury. I've had people say, "Oh God, I've been selected for jury duty. I had to serve on the jury." No, you had to lie to get on the jury. Nobody is forced against his will to serve on a jury. They always ask you very plainly, "Do you have any preconceived opinions concerning this case?" And you had to say no, whether you did or not, to get on the jury. I'd say no. If you said, "The guy looks like he's guilty as hell to me," or you could have said, "I just can't believe that a nice-looking young man like that could do such a thing," and I guarantee you, you'll be excused from the jury. You don't have to lie. You don't have to say that I have a preconceived opinion. You just have to say he looks like he's guilty as hell to me. And then you'll be excused. You do not have to serve on the jury. They won't let you serve on the jury. Make a statement like that. Well, same thing applies here in the Army. You know, if you're being drafted into the Army and you refuse to take the oath of allegiance, and it would help, you know, if you could cite James 5:12 and Matthew 5:33 through 37. And do you understand that it's the law and that you have to serve in the Army? No. In fact, if you draft me into the Army, I'm not going to serve there. And, well, do you know you could be put in prison? Would you please? I think that's probably what you ought to do, is throw me in prison. You can't throw somebody in prison because he refuses to serve. You can't throw somebody in prison because he's religious and refuses to take the oath. Now, oftentimes, the people who are making these threats, honest to God, believe that it's the truth. The five guys that threatened Ziggy with 4 years in Leavenworth, they probably all believed that if you refuse this service in the military, which they're all probably volunteers, and if you refuse this service, you're going to go to prison. Ziggy never went to prison. Now, I happen to know of three people that have done this. It's not very common. I don't deny that. You know, it isn't very common. My dad was drafted into the Army in 1943 during World War II. And he explained the draft to me. I went down, I filled out the form, and I put in my selective service form. If I was going to fill out this form today, just looking at the form, take a look over here on the back side where it says Privacy Act Statement. The Military Selective Service Act and pursuant regulations and the President's proclamation on registration require that you provide the indicated information, including your Social Security account number. The principal purpose of the required information is to establish or verify your registration with the Selective Service System. This information may be furnished to other government agencies for the stated purposes on a selective basis. Did you know that the information that you give to the Selective Service System may be shared with the Department of Justice, the State Department, Immigration and Naturalization Service, the Department of Defense and the U.S. Coast Guard, the Department of Labor, the Department of Education, the Office of Personnel Management and the U.S. Postal Service, the Department of Health and Human Services, the state and local governments, alternative service employers, and the general public? And failure to provide the required information may violate the Military Selective Service Act. Conviction for such a violation may result in imprisonment for up to 5 years and a fine of not more than $250,000. You could be fined $250,000. Notice the word conviction for such a violation may result. Doesn't say that it will result. It's an absolute guarantee. No doubt about it. Says it may result. And that's true. It may. But it's not very likely. You know, if you don't give the census taker the information that she wants, it may result in your prosecution. And it actually has happened. In 1891 was the last prosecution for a census violation. So I'm not telling you that your government can't prosecute you, but that doesn't mean that they can convict you, and it doesn't mean that you have to give the information and that you can't have your conviction overturned. For instance, do you remember a guy by the name of Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali? And then this draft thing came up over here, and he refused to serve. And then he went through litigation, a very high-profile person, you know, and so high-profile persons they like to litigate with. And so they're gonna teach everybody in the country, by God, you better get down there and register for the draft, and you better get over there and serve. Now, Elvis Presley, when he was drafted, he went into the military, and he served. And I'm not telling you that you shouldn't go into the military and serve. You know, if you want to, if you desire to for some reason, you know, it's there for you to join. Well, my point is that there isn't any law that requires you to serve there. Now, I think I would start, if it was me, that once I saw the Privacy Act statement, and here's your government, they're saying they're going to share this information with all these other people, it's pretty obvious that it violates my Fourth Amendment right to be secure in my person, houses, papers, and effects. That's the first red flag comes up in my face. Secondly, over here, it could result in my criminal prosecution. For instance, the Department of State and Immigration and Naturalization Service. Am I in the country legally? Do I really want to fill this information out and maybe get prosecuted by Immigration and Naturalization? They're telling you, we're going to use this information, and if you give us this information, we're going to give it to the State Department, and if possible, we're going to give it to Immigration and Naturalization, prosecute you for being in the country illegally. Am I in the country illegally? Not that I know of, but then, you know, that's the risk I run if I give them the information. Now, I don't have to give them the information, but if I do give them the information, they can certainly use it against me. That's the trick. If I give them this information, they can use it against me. So I'm not really too sure that I want to give them this information. Now, first of all, notice number one, they want your date of birth. Did you know that birthdays are the highest holy day of witches and warlocks? Did you know it's a practice of witchcraft? Did you know it's prohibited in the Bible? I do. So I would answer question number one, date of birth, religious objector, First Amendment. Number two, they want to know if I'm a male or a female. I really don't want to tell you if I'm a male or a female. And I'm going to put in there Fourth Amendment. That's a part of my person. That's my body. And you want to know if I'm male or female. And I'm sitting here saying, well, you know, take a look at me and arrive at your own conclusion. Now, I don't know if you've ever heard of this, but there's been some women served in the Army. There was a famous surgeon served in the Civil War. Anatomically, it was female, but this anatomical female passed herself off as a male wearing pants and cutting her hair short and so on. And being careful when she went to the latrine that other people didn't view her and not having too much up on top. And she passed off as a male and served in the Army, I think, for about 20 or 30 years, you know, a good long time. In any event, question number two, in my mind, if it was up to me, I'd put Fourth Amendment on there because I think that's a Fourth Amendment objection. First, another thing is that the Army takes males and females into the Army now. Just looking at it, I'm not really sure that it's really relevant to service in the military, whether I'm male or female. And my name and date of birth certainly isn't. The name of the month and the day of the day of birth. Then what's your social security number? Well, I don't have one. And the Supreme Court said if you've got one, you've got to use it. It said that Miller versus U.S. So I don't have one. I don't think a social security number is good. I think it's the mark of the beast. I think it's unscriptural and we ought not to have them. And so, you know, assuming that you didn't have one, I think I would put in there a First Amendment objector. So the first three questions, date of birth, sex, and social security number, I would answer with three constitutional objections. Now they want to know my full legal name. Well, I am who I say I am. I think I would give them my name. I think I would put in my name, Gordon, George, Kenneth. And then they want my current mailing address. And I think I would put in their Fourth Amendment objection. And that's question number five. What's your current mailing address? First of all, there's no requirement that I receive mail, no requirement that I have a post office box, and no requirement that I have an address. As a matter of fact, I don't have any of the above. I don't have a post office box. I don't have an address. Now, if you'd like to reach me, there is a post office box, that's P.O. Box 297. You can reach me. That's not my box, but so if you want, you know, privacy, then you probably don't want to tell people what your mailing address is. And I tell some people if I want you to know what my mailing address is or how you can get in touch with me, I'll give you an address and then you can send it. But if I didn't want you to call me and I didn't want you to have access to that, I wouldn't tell you. I told you about my wife. You know, we went into the doctor's office and you want to know what the mailing address was, and I put in Fourth Amendment objection. And when I was asked about it, I said, well, are you going to send me a letter? And the lady said no. I said, you're going to come and visit me? And she said, no. I said, well, if you're not going to visit me and you're not going to send me a letter, what in the hell do you want my address for? You know, oftentimes these questions that are on these forms really are just standard questions that really don't have any relevance to the subject matter at hand. So why don't we ask ourselves just exactly what is the necessity for this address? And the primary thing is, do I really want to hear from this person? I'm not sending my address out to the mafia. I don't want to hear from them. I don't want them to know where I live. I don't want them to know anything about me. I don't want the Selective Service System to know where I live. And I'm not going to tell them. So I would put in Fourth Amendment objection. Then they want your permanent mailing address. They want your current mailing address and your permanent mailing address. Now that's number six. Same answer. Number seven, telephone number. Now, it says, I affirm the foregoing statements are true. Now, this is where you get into trouble here. It's against the law for me to swear an oath. And the reason they want me to affirm that the foregoing statements are true is because they want to prosecute me for lying. And I don't hide it from anybody. I'm a pathological liar. In fact, the Bible tells me very plainly, it says, let God be true, though every man be found a liar. And I got to confess, I lied one time in the past. And I don't deny it. A long time ago, I lied. And as a matter of fact, I lied not too long ago. In the fairly recent past, I told a lie. And I suspect that based upon my past performance, I will probably lie again in the future. Probably. So why anybody would believe anything I say, I don't have a clue. So I sure as hell don't want to swear or affirm that any answers that I'm giving you are true, accurate, and correct. Now, they may be. The Bible tells you, let your yea be yea and your nay be nay. I'll share that one with you. You know, that's in Matthew 5:33-37. So here's God himself, you know, comes along and says, hey, listen, Joker, you're a liar, so why would you want to swear that you're telling the truth? And then they want your signature over here. Well, now, wait a minute, hang on a second. I really don't want a contract with these people, and my signature is my contract. I don't know if you understand that what a signature is. A signature is a pretty important personal endorsement. Now, where it says signature down there, I put my name up here at the top. It says George Gordon. So I think I would type my name where it says signature of the resident or registrant rather, as George Gordon. And I like to type these out because it looks a little more official. And I think I take this down to Pilate. Now, they're probably going to send you a letter back and say, this isn't correct. Boys and girls, there isn't anything on that page that isn't correct. And it conforms with the Privacy Act statement. They're telling you right up front, there's no privacy here, and we are going to give this information to these government agents and agencies. And any information you give can be used against you in a court of law. Now, the name up here doesn't even have to be. Now, there's a case called Heibel versus United States, or Heibel versus Nevada. Now, I forgot how they titled that. And then there's Brown versus Texas and Lawson versus Colander. Do you have to give your name to a police officer? 24 states say yes. No, it's 26 states say yes. 22 states or 23 states say no. I forgot now. It's 25, 23, or 26, 24, or something on that order. It's just about 50-50 that is split on this. I've got statutes that require you to identify yourself to a policeman, but even in Heibel, there's an out, the Fifth Amendment. You know, if my name was Osama bin Laden and a policeman came up and said, well, what's your name? You know, if I say, well, my name is Osama bin Laden, you know, you forced me to confess to a crime. Osama bin Laden's a wanted man. So it could well be that I got a warrant out for my arrest, and the Supreme Court left a little wiggle room there in Heibel. I don't know if you noticed that or not, but in the Heibel case, there's a little wiggle room. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here before we go any further, and that is that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, and that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and they do it 7 days a week. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. Or mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network, or the United States government, or your state government, or your local policeman, for that matter, or this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, where you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about privacy. Privacy. And Americans don't have a whole lot of privacy, not because the FBI or the IRS or anybody else is following you around, keeping all this information, making all these reports upon you, but because you fill out these forms like the Selective Service System, which then in turn takes this information and gives it to the Department of Justice, the State Department, the Defense Department, the Labor Department, the Education Department, the Office of Personnel Management, and the U.S. Postal Service, and the Department of Health and Human Services, and the state and local governments, state and local government. Boys and girls, there isn't anybody that they will not give this information to. Now, the Fourth Amendment guarantees me the right to be protected in my person, houses, papers, and effects, and there's a law that requires me to register with the Selective Service System. So I need to answer this, all the questions on the form, and then I need to go down to the Selective Service office and file the form with two witnesses. They may reject it. If they reject it, well, then it's not your fault. And if they accept it, then you're registered. Okay, and you haven't given them any information that violates your First, Fourth, and Fifth Amendment rights. Now, many people are unable to do this because they're unable to withstand the intimidation, the coercive effect of the policeman or the government official who, acting under color of law, intimidates you into giving the information against your will and over your objection. I showed you that in the last program. A lady wrote me a letter, her name was Rose, and she wrote me a letter and said, do I have to fill this out? Well, no, you don't have to fill it out, and no, you're not going to get prosecuted, and I presume that Rose didn't fill it out, and she didn't get prosecuted, and she didn't give the information, but most people that receive that letter follow instructions. Here's an illustration. Every year, the IRS sends out millions of deficiency notices, and they do it for under $100. It can be $67 this year, $87 next year. It's always an odd amount. And they send you a form letter generated by the computer. I forgot the number now, but it's in the millions, 17 million, 38 million. They send out a bunch of these letters, just at random. They just send them out. And it says, dear sir, you've made a mistake on your tax form, and you're short $87. Please remit. And the response to that is phenomenal. It's about 85 to 90% response. Only about 10% of the people out there won't respond and send the $87 or $67 because they don't want the hassle. And the IRS generates billions of dollars in revenue by doing that. It's a hell of a neat deal. I've thought about that. I'll just send a letter out to 100,000 people, and I'll say, you owe me $10. Please remit. Thousands of people would remit $10. especially if I put it in there, and if you don't remit this $10, I'm going to take you to small claims court and collect it. You know, I say, well, geez, I'd have to take a day off work to go to small claims court and defend it, and I'll just send this turkey $10. I don't owe it to him, but I'll send him the $10 anyway, because, you know, schemes like that go on all the time, and people submit to that. All right, so now I showed you the draft form. I told you the Ziggy Crothers story. Then I showed you how to answer government inquiries. When the government sends you an inquiry over there, answer every question. The Supreme Court gave us a little guidance on that. If you refuse to answer or to fill out the Selective Service System registration form, you're a draft evader now, for which you could be prosecuted, fined $250,000, and jailed for 5 years. It's a law of general applicability. You have to register with the Selective Service System. And I registered. When I registered, I filled it out, gave them all the information. If I was doing it again, I wouldn't. Nor would I affirm that the foregoing statements are true. You ever heard of a lady by the name of Martha Stewart? Martha Stewart is a self-made billionaire. Last time I heard, she had $2 billion. Hard-working woman. She was pretty poor. She was married and divorced. And, you know, she's just a struggling housewife. And she went out and she sold her products and her ideas and one thing and another. She's pretty famous here in the United States. And I don't know all that she sells. She's got a magazine and she sells. She's on television and she's telling women how to bake and how to cook and stuff like that. I don't think any man ever watches a program like that. I've seen her a couple of times and read a little about her. But anyway, she's made a lot of money. Well, anyway, some guy sold her some stock. It was $50,000 worth of stock. This woman's worth $2 billion. $50,000 compared to $2 billion is chicken feed. I mean, it's like putting a quarter in a parking meter. And this guy calls her up one day and says, Martha, that stock that I sold you for $50,000, it's going to take a bath here pretty recently, you know, pretty shortly. You better sell it. And so Martha Stewart goes out and she sells her stock today. And tomorrow the stock goes down. And so the guy that was involved in this, they got after him for insider trading or something. But anyway, they came to Martha Stewart, the FBI did, and they started asking her questions. And she answered their questions, but she lied to them. And then she signed some document that said that I swear that I'm telling you the truth over here. And they prosecuted her, not for selling the stock. She hadn't done anything wrong in selling the stock or buying the stock. What she did wrong was that she committed perjury. She lied. There wasn't any need for her to answer any questions. When the FBI came to her and said, my name is Joe Smedley and I'm with the FBI. Oh, that's wonderful. Well, what if some guy walked up to your door, knocks on your door, says, my name is Raphael or Luigi Linguini and I'm with the mafia. And I'm here to ask you some questions. Would you answer Luigi's questions? Well, she said, yeah, I'll answer your question. So the FBI asks her all these questions, and she answers the questions and lies to them, and they prosecute her. If she had said, is this a criminal investigation? Yes, it is a criminal investigation. Am I the target of the investigation? Well, no, you're not. Okay, I'm not the target of the investigation. Well, who are you targeting? Well, and we're not going to tell you who we're targeting, but we're going to ask you some questions. Okay. If I answer your questions, could the answers to any of my questions be used against me? Well, no. Maybe they're going to tell you no. If I answer these questions honestly and truthfully and I confess to a crime, will you give me immunity from prosecution? And I'll guarantee you, the minute you ask for immunity from prosecution, the FBI man's going to say, no, I don't have the authority to do that. And if he's dumb and he doesn't know any better, he says, yes, we'll give you immunity. Good. Put it in writing. Put it in writing that you're going to give me immunity from prosecution from any answers that I give to you. That way, when you lie, you've got immunity. Kind of like Oliver North. And if he won't give you immunity and you lie on this form, I want to tell you something about the census. Here, let me show you something. Census. And it's in Title 13, Section 221. It says, if you refuse to give us this information, we're going to prosecute you, fine you $100. And then 222, the next statement says, if you give us any false answers on here, we're going to fine you $500. If you refuse to answer any questions whatsoever, it's a $100 fine. If you answer our questions and make a mistake, it's $500 fine. Boys and girls, you're $400 ahead if you say, buzz off, I ain't answering. When the FBI comes to ask you questions, maybe you want to answer the questions. The FBI comes here to the law school probably, you know, once every 2 or 3 years, and they want to ask me some questions. And sometimes I answer their questions, and I'm a helpful guy. You know, if I'm not the target of the investigation and they're looking for a criminal, and they need my help in finding this criminal, if I can help the police find some guy that's a criminal, I'll do that. But I'm pretty selective about what I answer. You know, so when the policeman says, do you have a driver's license? And then did you file your tax return last year or something like that? You know, right away I go, well, excuse me, but what's this got to do with your investigation of this other guy over here? And are you going to use any of this information against me? And so on down the line. And so, you know, I can come to a pretty good conclusion. I can come to a realization that, you know, this is either good for me or not. So I'm not suggesting now that we all become anarchists and we don't cooperate with the police and their investigations, one thing or another. And after all, law and order requires our cooperation. And I'm not advancing crime here at all. I'm advancing rights. And there's no reason for you, like Martha Stewart. There wasn't any reason for Martha Stewart to get caught up in this kind of an investigation and then be convicted and sentenced to jail for perjury. She never had to answer their questions anyway. And when it comes to answering a question and you need to lie, you know, you got to tell a policeman a lie. Why don't you refuse to answer that question on the grounds that it could be a beginning point of a criminal investigation that involves me? There isn't any law that requires you to answer the question to start with. There's a provision in the Constitution that protects you from answering the question, but if you decide, for whatever reason, that you want to answer the question and then you lie, you can be put in prison like Martha Stewart. So, you know, you can decide for yourself what you want to do. Now, the FBI guy might threaten you. There was a famous case came down. He said, if you don't answer these questions and do what I tell you over here, we're going to take you downtown and question you. What the hell difference does it make if they take you downtown? Can't you shut up downtown as well as you can shut up in your living room? Yeah, it's up to you. You got to make your own decision here. Now, you have the right to remain silent. It will be a common utterance around the Supreme Court this fall. Justices will hear appeals in three cases involving the court's 37-year-old mandate that police officers warn suspects of their rights before beginning interrogations. The eventual rulings will tell police how far they can go to get answers from suspected criminals and let courts know when they must bar confessions or evidence from a trial. Officers hoping to enhance their chances of getting a suspect to divulge key information sometimes put off reading Miranda warnings. After they get a confession or answers that will lead to a weapon or other evidence, officers then run through the warnings that have been made famous on TV cop shows. The Supreme Court will decide if it's smart detective work or deceitful trickery or delay the warning. Critics say people may not realize that information divulged before they are read their rights cannot be used at trial, and they then repeat incriminating statements later in formal interviews. Yale Commissar, a Miranda expert who teaches law at the University of Michigan and the University of San Diego, said police officers are being trained to get around the Miranda rule, and the court should stop it. This is really making a joke out of the whole thing. Even the Supreme Court justices, who are not terribly enthusiastic about Miranda, have to realize you either keep Miranda on the books or you don't. Law enforcement is paying attention to the cases. They want to make an arrest, but they want to make it stick. So the National Association of Police Organizations don't want to be embarrassed by the prosecutor or the judge. Interrogations are restricted under the court's 1966 ruling in Miranda versus Arizona, which requires officers to warn the people that they arrest and question of their rights to remain silent and to see a lawyer. All right, so now the policeman arrests you, or the policeman asks you, says to you, I want to ask you some questions. What's your name? If I give you my name, could that be the beginning point of a criminal investigation which would involve me? Well, either yes or no. Now, I want you to understand that the guy that's asking the question is in the master position in a master-servant relationship. Do I really want the police officer to be in the master's position or in the servant's position? See, George Gordon here sees police officers as servants of the public, not as masters. I see myself as the master, employing the police officer to protect me and my property against unlawful intrusion. Well, I sure as hell don't want my servant making the same unlawful intrusion that the thief is making. I mean, you know, let's get our position straight here. Who's the boss and who's the servant? Now, either you're the boss or you're the servant. Now, Martha Stewart, you know, when the policeman came to ask her some question, was in the master's position until she agreed to answer the policeman's questions. So, as a general rule, you know, if you come here to ask me questions, the answer is I ain't telling you a damn thing. If you're coming here to ask me questions about somebody else, I don't have any problems answering questions about somebody else. No, you want to ask me about the mafia guy? You want to ask me what I saw when the red car hit the green car? You know, I can be a helpful witness, you know, if that's what you want. But, you know, when you start asking me what's your name, what's your address, what's your telephone number, where do you work, how much money do you make, where do you bank? You know, when do you have sex with your wife? Are you married? You know, you're starting to get into an area here that's none of your damn business, and I don't. And I don't have to. And a lot of these questions are just routine questions. We just ask everybody the same 50 or 75 questions, and we expect everybody to answer them. And we don't have to. Now, Miranda versus Arizona, you know, when the policeman stops you, you know, the first thing out of your mouth ought to be, what's your probable cause for making the stop? You should have a pen and paper right here. When the policeman says, my probable cause for making the stop is you were weaving in your own lane. Oh, really? Was it very pronounced, officer? Well, yes, it was very pronounced. And as a result of this, are you using that then as probable cause to make a criminal inquiry? Well, yes, I am. Have you been drinking? Officer, don't you think you should give me my Miranda warning before the fact rather than after the fact? So let me tell you that I want to reserve all of my rights at all times, and I waive none of my rights at any time for any cause or reason. Now, I don't want to answer any of your questions. Now, if you're a licensed driver, give me your license, registration, proof of insurance. That's what the law requires. That's it. You don't have to talk to the guy. If the guy says, well, isn't it a bright, sunny day today? You don't have to say yes or no. It's a bright, sunny day today. If he says, oh, God, isn't it really nasty? It's raining. You don't have to answer. And if he says, well, where are you going? You don't have to tell him where you're going. Well, where are you coming from? You don't have to tell him where you're coming from. You don't even have to talk to the guy. I mean, you know, I don't think I'd be rude to the policeman and say, you know, you're an ugly SOB. I don't like your looks and I don't want to talk to you. I don't think I would do that. But I could. It's called free speech. Most people think that they have some duty, some legal responsibility to talk to the policeman. They don't. None. Zero. Zilch. There are some legal requirements. You're a licensed driver. Give him your license. Give him your registration. Give him your proof of insurance. That's a legal requirement. You agreed to that when you got the driver's license. There are certain things you agreed to. It's in the contract. That's life. You didn't have to make the contract, but you did. Or you thought you had to, or whatever. And so now you've made the deal, and so now you've got to honor your end of the deal. Just like any contract that you write, you agreed to make your mortgage payments every month, now make them. You agreed to make your car payment every month, make it. But what you don't agree to, you don't have any duty or obligation to perform on. And speech is one of those. You know, you have a right to free speech, and you have a right to silence. If you have a right to speak, you have a right to remain silent. That's what Miranda's all about. You have a right to remain silent. You have a right to have counsel present. Doesn't have to be a licensed lawyer either. Now, if they won't let you have counsel, shut up. It's a wild new idea. Don't tell them anything. All of the evidence that's ever going to be used against you has to be furnished by you. There isn't any other source for it. You either did it or you didn't. So, you know, if you just keep quiet, you know, then at least the information that they need to get a conviction isn't coming out of your mouth. Martha Stewart can explain that to you in greater detail. All right, so that's where we're at with freedom of speech. We're about out of time again. I'm going to have to leave it right here and remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide on the Internet daily. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure. We teach business law. We teach agricultural law, civil rights, and we teach biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's eight in all. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like to learn more about our homeschooling program, then go to our website, the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. Yeah. Good night, friends.